Hello. So this is my life. Every week, I have a Skype call into my mom's nursing home in the Bronx.
Hi, Mommy. It's Yvonne. Ibong. Tu hija.
Each call starts more or less the same. I reintroduce myself to my mother and remind her that this is her daughter, Yvonne, speaking.
How are you feeling? This is Margot. Margita. Tu nieta.
My younger daughter, Margot, is on this call, and we are trying to get my mom to recognize us. She's got Alzheimer's disease, and it's been hell, and COVID-19 has made it worse. The last time I saw her in person was in March. She knew who I was then. It was a week before the coronavirus shutdown in New York City, where she lives.
We want to inform you that we have received confirmation that an individual at Beth Abraham Center has been diagnosed with COVID-19.
And now I get endless robocalls telling me that the virus is in her nursing home. People are dying there. I know I am losing her every second of every day. If COVID doesn't take her, Alzheimer's will.
While we understand the inconvenience this may cause, it is crucial that we restrict visitation to reduce the spread of this virus.
And it sucks. The Skype calls are hard. She is distant, unfocused. She can barely speak a few words and they rarely make sense. I was told to use music to reach her.
Mommy?
She loves Latin music. She loved to dance.
Mommy.
And so I try.
Tito Puente.
My mom's name is Ramona Lati, or Ramonita Mota Lati, or Ramona Novelia Mota Hemosen Lati, if I want to tease her.
Novelia Mota, Novelia, Nova, Nova,
Nova,
woo! Ui, ui, Novelia, ui. A very ugly name you used to tell me when I was a kid. You hated your middle name.
She's 87. And it's been 4 years now since she was diagnosed. 4 years of the lonely journey, which in the end, I walk alone. Because my mom has no idea what day it is, what year it is, how old she is, or where she is.
You don't know who I am? You promised me you were never going to forget me. And look at you now forgetting me. Thanks a lot.
From Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and today, Alzheimer's in color. For many aging Latinos, Latinas, and African Americans, Alzheimer's disease has become one of the leading health crises. Access to healthcare, pre-existing conditions, the quality of institutions that help aging people of color, all of these disparities become amplified by a diagnosis of Alzheimer's. As more people live longer, the challenges around Alzheimer's keep growing. Experts predict that by 2060, there could be an over 800% growth of Latinos with this incurable degenerative form of dementia. For journalist Yvonne Lati, this story is personal. Her mother, Ramona Lati, was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 2016. Yvonne has been documenting her mother's illness for the past 4 years and brings us this intimate portrait of her mom's life before and after Alzheimer's.
Hello, hola.
Dile hola.
I love my mom. I really, really do. I can't say I have understood her or the decisions she's made. I can't say she understood me either. I can't say we belong on a Latinx American experience Hallmark card or that our mother-daughter bond is unique. She pissed me off and could be a pain in the ass. I know she would say that about me too. You know the teen that likes to wear black and locks herself in her messy room with her headphones on all the time? That was me. We had some epic battles for sure. In some ways, I think we were the same person living different extremes, each wanting so much more than what is expected of women like us. My mom faced dirt poor poverty in the Dominican Republic, where she was born. She joined a wave of immigration to the U.S. at 19, and she surpassed every challenge thrown her way. I'm not ashamed to say I am desperate to connect with her, to understand her story and make it mine, and tell the world Ramona Latty, my mom, matters.
My name is Ramona Latty.
That was just 4 years ago.
What's going to happen is going to happen no matter what you do. I might as well take it easy. Don't worry, don't march.
This was right after her diagnosis, when we could still talk to each other, and we were going on endless doctor's visits looking for some hope, a treatment, a way to slow the disease down.
Some people are scared of death.
But you're not scared?
Because I'm not scared of dying. I pay my due to society already.
Since my mother said those words, her life went on a rapid decline. The thread that holds us together gets thinner, the conversations more difficult, and my profound sadness over losing her harder to manage.
My first impressions were that she was able to propel her wheelchair with her feet, not her hands.
These days, my lifeline is the staff at the Beth Abraham Nursing Home in the Bronx where my mom lives. This is her nurse practitioner, Iris Nagin. She has supported me on countless occasions. Iris started working with my mom in January of 2019.
She seemed to communicate a little better in Spanish than in English. The impoverishment of speech and often the inability to walk are connected to having had dementia for a while.
Alzheimer's is a brain disease. It slowly destroys your memories, your ability to think, speak, walk, talk. Even the simplest tasks become impossible. It's a wicked form of dementia, and it will slowly kill you. The type of Alzheimer's my mom has is not genetic, but my odds of getting the disease are slightly higher because she has it. Visiting my mom is always hard, and when I don't see her, I worry and feel guilty. And I don't even know if my Skype calls help her at all at this point.
I guess really is one of the things that happens with dementia is the world gets very, very small.
And Iris tells me that these visits and calls are hard on my mother as well.
Hi. And I think when people come from the outside world, they bring with them expectations. And I think the expectations can be hard on someone who has advanced dementia.
But that has been the challenge of the disease, understanding it and holding on to Ramona Latty. I find myself thinking about where she came from, who she was, her story pre-Alzheimer's. Because Alzheimer's is not who she is. It's not her story. It's just how her story ends. My mom dropped out of school in the eighth grade to take care of her little brother so her mom could work. Her father died when she was 12. She barely knew him. In the late 1940s, her mother and aunt came to New York City. It was the first wave of Dominican immigration, and although many were fleeing the brutal dictator Rafael Trujillo,
picturesque Trujillo City, capital of the Dominican Republic, turns out for the inauguration of the president for whom the city is named. General Trujillo is the strong man of the republic.
Many were just looking for work and an escape from poverty. My then-teen mom was left to take care of everything at home, which now included her aunt's children. But then...
Immigration has brought in many people from the Caribbean area. Most of the immigrants went into the factories and found their homes in the tenements of America's growing cities.
In 1950, she got her chance to come to New York City. She was 19, and she got a job in a pocketbook factory and went to beauty school. It's such a New York City story. She met Albert, my dad, in a beauty parlor in Spanish Harlem run by a Cuban woman who was married to a Jamaican man and as a result had Jamaican customers, which included my grandmother. My dad went to pick her up one day, saw my mom in the beauty parlor, and it was love at first sight, even though she spoke no English and he spoke no Spanish.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, I'm Grace. How are you?
Okay, hold on a minute.
Social distancing means creating more personal space between yourself and others.
So I wanted to start a few years into my mom's journey in New York City. And to do that, I reached out to Grace Lawrence, or Aunt Grace, who has been very close to my mom for over 60 years.
And we became fast friends.
Aunt Grace is 94, lives in Queens, and her memory, unlike my mom's, is sharp as a tack.
Okay. I might as well say okay. When you're my age, things happen up and down, but I'm okay. So just leave it at that.
Aunt Grace told me that she met my mom in the late 1950s through my dad.
Well, I know that he became very close and he wanted to meet his girlfriend. His girlfriend at that time was Ramona. So he didn't say that much about her except that she was Spanish.
That's what they called Latinos back then, Spanish.
And of course, that didn't bother me at all.
When you first met my mother, what did you think of about her? Like,
your mother loved to dance. She was so pretty and vivacious.
And that's how I remember her, dancing with us in the kitchen to disco, salsa, merengue. Everything was hips, hips, hips. Didn't matter the music.
She really was a beautiful young lady. And of course, you know, your mother was very stylish. She was always stylish.
Grace's parents were from Barbados and immigrants. So Aunt Grace knew about the prejudice that existed between some Caribbean blacks towards Latinos, which my mom walked right into by loving my dad.
Albert's mother was Jamaican, and she was a very strict lady, very proper. And unfortunately, she did not want to come to the wedding because Ramona was Spanish.
So what was happening was this. My grandmother was raised by a well-off family in Jamaica, and although she was a maid in New York, she felt her son was too good for my mom.
She was very disappointed she didn't come to the wedding. But that did not stop the wedding.
Aunt Grace was the matron of honor.
The wedding went on and your father kissed his wife. He was so proud of her.
But my grandmother Nana did not accept the marriage. Nana was a dark-skinned woman who would not accept a light-skinned Latina in her family. My mom came from the Dominican Republic, a country with extremely negative attitudes towards black skin. But she didn't care that my father was black. The story on my father's side of the family was different. My mom was Spanish, and that was enough to be rejected.
Ramona really worked on establishing a relationship with her mother-in-law.
And this is something I really admire about my mother. She did not give up. Picture this. My mom lived on 108th Street near Central Park West, and my grandmother was just about 6 blocks away. My father would visit Nana every week without my mom, so she worked on being the best version of herself to figure this out. She worked on her English, she worked on being a good wife, and she had hope, no matter how much she was ignored and rejected. But it took the birth of my older sister Margie in 1960 to finally warm my grandmother's heart. On my next Skype call to my mother, I try to bring up our old address.
15 West 108th Street. Remember 108th Street?
Maybe that address, the names of her family, would trigger a memory.
Margie. Remember Margie? Do Iha Margie?
But I came up empty. My talk with Aunt Grace in April left me wanting more. The mom I have had for years now is a shadow of who she was. And I want that mother back so badly.
Coming up on Latino USA.
She was seeing this boy in her apartment, this like evil boy. And at one point it like got so bad that she was hiding knives so that she could stab the boy.
Stay with us, no te vayas.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, BetterHelp, the online counseling service dedicated to connecting you with a licensed counselor to help you overcome whatever stands in the way of your happiness. Fill out a questionnaire and get matched with a professional tailored to your needs. And if you aren't satisfied with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time, free of charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/Latino to get 10% off your first month. Get the help you deserve with BetterHelp.
Hey, we're back. And before the break, journalist Yvonne Latty had introduced us to her mother's world and what it's like to have advanced Alzheimer's disease in the middle of a COVID-19 crisis. We return now to Yvonne's intimate portrait of her life with Ramona. And just a warning, there's some offensive language in this part of the story.
In mid-April, about a month after the COVID lockdown started in New York, I recruited Nola, my oldest daughter, to help me dig through some old photos I keep in a big plastic bin in our home in Philadelphia. I took these photos out of my mom's photo albums when I cleaned out her apartment after she was placed in the nursing home. The day I packed them, 3 years ago, I was crying, confused, and disappointed in myself for not being able to slow down the inevitable. I have not looked at the photos since. Nola, this is my mom's wedding picture.
I've seen this one. It's really pretty.
Nola is 21 and studies acting and directing at NYU. We're sitting on an old yellow sofa in the basement, and the first photo we pull out is an 11x14 black and white wedding picture.
What do you think of her dress?
I love her dress. I love all the lace.
In the photo, my mom is wearing a beautiful white lace dress, and in her arms, a bouquet of white flowers. My dad is in a dark suit behind her, holding her. She has a slight smile on her face. She's 26, and she looks almost regal and ready for what's next.
She looks like you.
Yeah.
Do you see yourself in her?
Mm-hmm.
I think
you've always looked alike.
Nola looking like my mom has always given me comfort. Nola and my mom were always close. She was her Nolita, her oldest grandchild, and she loved to cook Dominican food for her and buy her clothes. But these photos reveal an abuelita Nola had never seen.
Wait, what's this one?
Nola pulls out a black and white photo booth image of my mom taken in the early 1950s.
That's when she first came to this country.
She looks so good in this picture.
She's looking away from the camera in a playful way. She's wearing hoop earrings and dark lipstick. The photo seems timeless.
She's working it.
She's like working it. Can I have this?
Yeah.
I really like this picture. She looks like you in this.
Really?
Yeah, she looks like you.
When people tell me I look like my mom, I don't believe it.
Oh my God. What a compliment. She looks so pretty.
We are different colors. She's light-skinned, and I am dark-skinned. I think she's way prettier than me. She's petite, while I'm 5'8". And when I was growing up, there was this idea that the lighter-skinned you are, the prettier. I tried to explain this to Nola. And I wasn't light-skinned, and I wasn't even my mother's complexion or Margie's complexion. I was darker than my dad. And my darker skin led to bullying. I was called ugly and mocked. The first time I was called a nigger, I was in third grade, and it was by light-skinned Latino classmates. We were, you know, the ugly ones. Mm. And there was nothing I could do to change the color of my skin. My mom indirectly reinforced the negativity by constantly commenting on my hair and forcing me into painful smaller shoes because she didn't want me to have big feet. Although she was rejected by my grandmother for being Spanish, she held some form of internalized racism, which was directed at me and my hair. Black hair is bad. Straight hair is good.
You know, like the hair had to be relaxed. It had to be pressed. I couldn't sweat.
Everything had to be about my appearance. And I was a tomboy. I wanted to play sports and wanted to run around.
My hair didn't really go natural until you were born. And when you were born and she saw you, one of the first things she said to me was, how old does she have to be before we can straighten her hair?
That was the game changer. I never relaxed my hair again. And my mom had to live with both my daughter's curls. Growing up with my mom could be frustrating. There were a lot of extremes. I grew up on 108th Street between Manhattan Avenue and Central Park West. It was rough back then, and my mom would not let us out of the house. My outside space was the fire escape. I wanted to share what that was like with my daughter, Nola.
There were murders and people got raped and it's a lot of robberies.
One of my early memories is one afternoon when my mom went shopping and came home with a red welt across her face. She had been robbed.
She had a man's handprint on her face because he slapped her so hard when he robbed her. And she was crying and she was really upset and she called my dad.
This was not a one-off. My mom was robbed a lot.
But the next week, my mother got her shopping cart out again and she went right back to the grocery store.
Mm. I admired her for it, but it made me angry. The neighborhood was filled with abandoned buildings and so much neglect. Our building was abandoned by the landlord when I was a kid, and the city took it over. Fires were set, aimed at forcing us to move. Most winters, we went weeks without heat or hot water. Sometimes it was so cold, we all had to sleep in the living room with a space heater and close off the rest of the apartment. But my mom was happy. I think she would say those were the best years of her life. We were all together.
I feel like there's a lot of her that I know, you know, and that I've experienced, and a lot of her that I don't. Like, I can see a lot of vibrance in her.
My mother's world was the pocketbook factory, the beauty parlor, and then finally the insurance company she worked for in their mailroom. She felt like a big success coming to this country, and she always raised me to believe how lucky I was to be here. But that wasn't how I felt. So like my mom in the Dominican Republic, I dreamed of a way out.
And that was something that really drove me in my life, was figuring out how to get the heck out of there.
I mean, I think that you're both driven, you know? Like, you talk about wanting to leave 108th Street, but, like, they were there because Abuelita left DR. Like, so there's definitely, like, just a wanting to move up and out. I mean, did you guys not get along?
I really didn't understand her.
By the time I was 16, I felt I had grown past her in so many ways. I struggled to understand the lucky sprays, the candle lighting for saints, the hoarding, the confusion. The next photo we pull out of the bin is of my dad, my mom, and my sister.
And this is a photo of their first Christmas with my sister, Margie.
It's an 8x10 black and white photo. They're in front of the tree, all dressed up. My sister is sitting on my dad's lap, and my mom is crouched behind them, smiling. Margie has a smirk on her face.
Aw, Margie's such a smush.
Mommy, do you remember? It was Margie's birthday last week. Mommy? Mommy?
My big sister Margie was killed in a car accident in 1988 when she was 27. She was engaged and on her way back from Reese Beach in Brooklyn when a driver high on pills struck the car her fiancé was driving. Margie and my mom were real close. She spent endless hours in the kitchen cooking with her, talking to her. They looked so much alike and seemed to have so much in common. I felt close to Margie too. She was my playmate, my friend, and always looked out for me.
This is a really hard picture for me, Nola, because when Margie died, this was the photo that my mother was holding and running up and down the house screaming.
If there was anything that changed my relationship with my mom, it was Margie's death. A few months after Margie died, I booked my mom and I a flight to Paris with a stop in Rome. I did it on a whim. It was a magical trip. We scratched Margie's name on every surface we could, saw every tourist site, walked too much, ate too much, and drank too much. At one point, we were climbing to the top of the Arc de Triomphe, and she just zoomed by me with this huge smile on her face. And when we got to the top, there was a gorgeous view of Paris. I looked over at her, and at that moment, there was so much joy in her eyes, so much hope. Despite her pain, my mom was alive and living her life to the fullest. And I learned so much about strength just watching her survive the unthinkable. And for the first time in my life, I saw what we had in common.
Mommy, I was thinking about our trip. Remember the trip we took to Dominican Republic? Remember that trip we took? All the fun we had? Do you remember?
24 years later, I took another life-changing trip with my mom. It was 2012, her 80th birthday. And I decided to take her and my daughters, Nola was 14 and Margot 11, to the Dominican Republic. I wanted them to experience where my mother had come from.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a trip.
For me, that trip was the first red flag that something was seriously wrong.
I think that going to DR, it was really clear because we saw Abuelita in the place that wasn't her house. And so like seeing her in comparison with like other hotel guests and like in an airport, like, I think it's a lot easier to be like, oh, she doesn't understand how to do things that she should know how to do.
The trip started out uneventful. When we exited the plane, I grabbed Margot's hand and Nola held my mom's.
And she had some kind of like idea that we had to go down some like secret corner that was like not where anybody else was going.
I heard you say, Abuelita, no. Mm-hmm. Abuelita, no. And then I was like, you know, mommy.
Yeah. I realized that like me as the older sibling too, you know, would have to like kind of keep an eye on her, you know, and take care of her and make sure that she didn't run off.
As we finally made it to the hotel, my mom morphed into a different person.
I mean, we all turned to her like, okay, mommy, go for it. Check us in.
We were just kind of expecting that Abuelita would be like our resident Spanish speaker. Like we tell her what to say in English and she'd say it in Spanish.
Right, because she spoke Spanish all the time. It was primary
language.
She
was always Spanish, you know? And if it was English, it was like English with like Spanish words kind of mixed in there.
And this was like, this still makes me laugh. I know it's not funny, but stop. She turned to us like stone-faced. And she was like, I do not speak Spanish.
And my husband's American.
My husband is American. I do not speak Spanish. And we were like, what?
I was in shock. I had no idea what my mother was doing. My dad had died in 1997, 15 years before. And my mom's first language had always been Spanish. And suddenly she was refusing to speak it? It didn't make any sense.
She was so distant in a place that we really thought she was going to like come alive and be really excited.
A few months after the trip to the Dominican Republic, we were joined by Aunt Grace and her husband Paul for Thanksgiving. Aunt Grace had noticed my mom had seemed off lately and confronted us both. My mother said everything was fine, and I chose to believe my mom.
Your mother did not want to get old. That's another thing. She liked to stay the way she was. She wanted to be young. She did not want to get old.
But my mother was not okay.
She stopped liking people. You know, she had friends, and then she, like, didn't like them anymore. She got really reclusive. She got, like, angrier.
In December of 2015, I decided to go with my mom to see her doctor. He suggested cognitive testing and gave us a referral. 3 months later, after a series of tests, we ended up in a neurologist-packed Bronx waiting room filled with Black and brown people. When it was finally our turn, we were told my mom had Alzheimer's disease. The doctor wrote down a few URLs and told me to Google it. A life-altering, life-ending diagnosis was given to her in the same manner I was told I was nearsighted. I grabbed my mother's hand as she stared blankly at the doctor. It was clear she was just a number to him, part of the statistic that shows a growing number of Latinos and African Americans stricken by this disease. I soon learned that African Americans are 2 times more likely and Latinos 1.5 times more likely to develop Alzheimer's disease than white Americans. And so here is where my mom and I clashed again. She struggled to believe the diagnosis while I was researching the hell out of it and trying to form a fight plan.
But your mother said to me, like, you know how Yvonne is. She's always talking. I said, your daughter talks a lot of stuff, but a lot of stuff is true because she explores things.
I was lost in my research and disgusted by what I found. All the issues that plague communities of color converge in making Alzheimer's disease the last chapter of too many of our lives. Low socioeconomic status, high rates of cardiovascular disease, and a higher incidence of diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, and depression are aggravating factors. Even education factors in. Latinos also may develop symptoms at a younger age than non-Latino whites. And the community is under-resourced. Income, retirement, and pension benefits are far too thin to get too many members of my community the help, the resources it needs. I thought about my future. Was this going to be my end too? And I searched for answers, anything to help. A few weeks after my mother received her diagnosis, hallucinations began to take over her world.
She was seeing this boy, like, in her apartment, this, like, evil boy. To me, felt like big demon energy.
By the summer of 2016, things spiraled out of control. My mother's behavior became more erratic, even dangerous.
And at one point, it, like, got so bad that she was hiding knives so that she could stab the boy. She needed an aide all the time because it just wasn't safe for her to be alone.
6 months after getting her original diagnosis, I scrambled to get her into a clinical trial. Latinos make up just 7.5% of research participants, and I read that clinical trials are key to finding ways to help not only my mom, but other Latinos caught in the web of this disease. Since my mother was presenting with psychotic tendencies, her new doctor suggested this could help. The time demands were horrific. the driving her back and forth from the Bronx, where she lived, to Columbia Presbyterian Hospital in Upper Manhattan, the waiting in the office, interviews with several doctors, the administration of the drug, which she could not do herself. It was about 6 weeks of stress, and in the end, she got the placebo. I was wrecked.
And, like, things just got harder. Like, we couldn't do Christmas the same way.
I also discovered my mom had given away all her money to mail-order psychics who promised her riches. She was always binge-buying from catalogs.
And I feel like, and it's because you, like, love her and, like, see the best in her and, like, want her to be okay. But you always hope that it's going to get better, and instead it gets worse.
And it did. The hallucinations of the boy in her apartment were joined by ICE agents who she believed were coming to deport her despite the fact that she was an American citizen. She would call me frantic that they were coming for her, begging me to help her. Things kept spiraling out of control until she ended up in the nursing home, the last thing I wanted to happen. And now my mom, who worked all her life, learned English, raised two daughters, and gave me the tools to succeed, her life has deteriorated to this.
Mommy, Ramona, Ramonita, Abuelita.
I love you.
My mom's nursing home is big. Its residents are mostly Black and Latino. Some strap boomboxes to their wheelchairs, so you often hear music like salsa or hip-hop. The elevators are very slow, and it's a bit run down. Before COVID, they had started renovations, but it's a sad place. Not a lot of smiles.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
When COVID first struck her nursing home, I took advantage of the Skype calls they offered.
Hi, Mommy. Hi, how are you?
The first two or three I made, she seemed to know who I was by the end of the call. But the last few I had, she had absolutely no idea.
Patients, they have no recreational activity. They're isolated a lot.
Iris, the nurse we heard from earlier, told me about the extreme lockdown measures in my mother's nursing home after the first case of COVID-19 was discovered back in March.
The little bit of stimulus they were able to absorb has disappeared.
My mom did have a group of friends. She did art classes, played bingo, went to church, and loved the music group where they would play Celia Cruz, Mark Anthony, and Beyonce to the residents who would dance in their wheelchair. Now she's wheeled into the hallway and placed 6 feet away from her friends so they can look at each other.
I've seen a lot of patients experience a tremendous decline.
That's my mom. I last saw her 5 months ago and have no idea if or when I will see her again. I know there has been a lot of death in the nursing home, but I can't get a straight answer to how many residents have died. Sometimes I obsess over what's next. What will happen to her? What is the timeline? But there is none.
It's a hard answer. I mean, usually loss of functional status, the loss of the ability to speak, weight loss of ability to feed yourself, more apathy. All of that points to worsening dementia. And dementia is a fatal illness.
All I have at this point are memories to get me through. Like the last time she sang me happy birthday last year, before she truly lost the ability to speak.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Mary Bone. Happy birthday to you.
Yay! And a little bit of Nola's wisdom.
I don't expect anything from her. I can always just see it at face value and be happy that I get to see her at all.
Nola is so my mom's grandchild.
I don't care. I don't care if she remembers me or not. If she knows my name, like, okay. And if she doesn't, like, that's okay too.
And so I asked her if she could reach her just one more time, what she would want to talk to her about.
Her hair is getting so long.
And it's really soft and it's really gorgeous. And I wish I could tell, like, completely lucid Aquilita that her hair looks really nice.
And my mom's hair, for the first time in her life, is natural. I wish I could tell her about my daughter Margot's high school parking lot graduation. And I wish I could tell her that Nola's doing great in college and in love. And I wish I could fill her in on all the gossip, tell her stories about my hectic job. And I wish that she would remember me, always remember me, her daughter, her only living daughter.
Hi, Mommy, it's Yvonne. Yvonne, tu hija.
She's over there.
But she doesn't remember me anymore. So in the end, COVID-19 did take my mom, not physically, but it took what was left of her essence. I love her, and I choose to hold her memories until I too am just a memory.
Thanks to Yvonne Laddie for bringing us that story. Yvonne is a journalist who also teaches journalism at New York University. Alzheimer's in Color is a collaboration with Black Public Media, with funding provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. We want to thank Denise Green from BPM, Jason Resendez, the organization Latinos Against Alzheimer's, and Janelle Pfeiffer. If you need help or support in navigating Alzheimer's disease, contact the Alzheimer's Association at alz.org. This episode was edited by Luis Treyes. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Sofia Palizacá, Julieta Martinelli, Ginny Montalvo, Alisa Escarce, and Alejandra Salazar, with help from Andrea López Cruzado, Adriana Tapia, and Raúl Pérez. Fact-checking by Amy Tardif. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw. Our director of programming and operations is Natalia Fidelholtz. Our digital editor is Amanda Alcantara. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Julia Rocha. Our intern is Sofia Sanchez. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. And a reminder, Alzheimer's touches many of us. My own father passed away from complications of Alzheimer's in 2015. Papi, que descanses en paz.
Funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Latino USA is made possible in part by New York Women's Foundation. The New York Women's Foundation, funding women leaders that build solutions in their communities and celebrating 30 years of radical generosity. And the Wincote Foundation.
I'm Lisa Hagen.
And I'm Chris Haxel. We're the hosts of No Compromise, NPR's new podcast exploring one family's mission to reconstruct America using two powerful tools, guns and Facebook.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Join us for the No Compromise podcast from NPR.